mention that. When we talk about Yank, the subtitle reporting the greatest generation, it's pretty clear in this terminology of the greatest generation of how we feel about that war. This was one of the great triumphs in human history of good versus evil. Vietnam, obviously, a much more conflicted sense. In about the 30 seconds we have for this answer, could you give us an update? You've been back. Your book is about returning. What can you tell us about Vietnam? Is there any? Are we anywhere close to coming to grips with this as a nation?
Very definitely. But I think in an unparalleled way, the Vietnam War still haunts Americans as we grapple with the uncertainty of losing our first war, of what in fact.
I'm not going to even let you go on and on with that rhetoric, this greatest generation nonsense. Look, this is the same generation that was lynching black people on a nightly basis. The same generation that was collaborating with Adolf in the form of Henry Ford, in the form of the international business machine, i.e. IBM, in the form of Standard. This greatest generation, greatest generation of lynch mob thieves and hooligans. And yeah, you won't get over the Vietnam syndrome anymore, will you? Over the Iraqi syndrome. An ass kicking for a bully imperialist is hard to swallow. You know what time it is. Some more ass kicking time, slave time. Listening to 104.1, 106.7 Illinois, 101.1 Santa Cruz, LUBER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe, and tune in to your Slave Revolt Radio in the blog sphere. Just Google in on your web, Slave Revolt Radio, and you'll know what time it is. Tonight, we're going to shoot our way into various topics dealing with the viciousness and callousness of a draconian society, all the way up to the ruins of empire as it deals with professional sports. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1 Slave Revolt. File time. You know, as the social, moral, economic fabric of this industrialized, privatized market society continues to decay. All forms of social norms, civility, decency, just go out the window. The contradictions are extraordinary as they overlook and overstep one's daily life. Recently, there is an incident where a mother in Texas called 911 because of the way her two daughters were acting. One's 12, one's 13. The mother said that one of the daughters is already around her side, and she was having trouble controlling them as they were in a fight. We're going to explore how that has transpired in the corporate media world and the sides that those within power take to show you the wedge that they are intentionally developing and fermenting within this society. So first, let's hear the mother who makes the call to the 911 dispatch and see how it plays itself out. Check this out.
They were physically fighting with each other, and one of them kicked a hole in a door. And they're 12 and almost 14, and the 12-year-old is completely out of control. And I physically, if she's as big as I am, I can't control her.
Okay, did you want us to come over to shoot her? Are you there?
Excuse me?
That's a joke. Okay, so...
Who are you? What is your name?
Mike Forbes.
Okay, that's not funny, Mike.
Guess
what? I'm going to file a formal complaint.
I don't blame you a bit.
Because you know what? This is really not very funny.
I know it's not, ma'am.
Well, guess what? It's not going to be very funny when I go in front of your supervisor and tell him...
I understand.
I guess he can just listen to the tape.
Yes, he can. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, sorry doesn't cut it. I need a police officer.
Hold on. Ma'am?
Yeah.
Okay. 10 and 12 or 12 and 14?
12 and 13 and a half.
Okay. All right. I'll get police officers on the way. They're on an emergency call right now, but as soon as I can get one free, I'll get them on the way.
Oh, well, don't rush or anything.
Well, I apologize for my smart remark, and I will get them in route as soon as I can.
Okay, and what is your name again?
Mike Forbes. My number is 605.
Thank you.
All right, so as you see what happened, when this woman calls in to the little 911 dispatch, the response basically is, do you want us to send someone over there and shoot them? Now, there's several things going on. And first of all, the mere fact that in a squabble between two kids, parents or many parents now feel that it's necessary to involve the police is one, a sign of decline. You have a situation where people have been programmed to go to the most extreme levels of the enforcers of the state, the police, as an antidote, as a problem solver, as opposed to neighborhood committees, friends, daycare people. Often grandmothers can play that type of a role when their kids are getting out of line, etc., etc. In many urban like neighborhoods, you often have like a grandmother who's a daycare. Everyone knows her, and when there's problems at the school, they'll send that kid to the daycare mother, you know, who's this grandmother type who has roots in the community, doesn't take no stuff, to kind of help, you know, straighten the kid up and stuff. But now you see in many of these little societies and stuff and communities out in rural land and whatever, where there's such a breakdown of any kind of community cohesion that she feels is necessary to turn to the cops. Now, this is pushed out by the corporate media that the kids are predators, that you need all types of stringent, almost militaristic forces to pound them on the head, to scare them straight, etc., etc. So she calls, and then you have this crackpot talking about, oh, do you want us to send over some police to shoot them? You know, like it's a joke. Not even concerned that obviously if someone is calling, they're probably in some kind of fragile state of mind. But, man, this is America. Who cares about that? Who cares about, you know, whatever reason someone feels possessed to call for help, misguided or not? This is the type of society that we have, where there's so many breakdowns that people have to call or feel they have to call 911. Then you got some crackpot dispatcher out there making smart-ass comments. This is at the same time that more and more draconian laws, in any way that these raggedy enforcers of order can put someone within to the criminal justice system, they march full steam ahead. So this is an indication of how sick things are really getting. But next, you have a talk show host on 12:20 a.m., Mike Gallagher. He decides this is something that he needs to cover. So who does he want to cover this incident over with? The mother? Nah. The dispatcher. Let's see how it plays out. Check it out.
You didn't notice, if you were keeping track, Mike Forbes apologized no less than 5 times to this woman. The police chief has apologized. The police chief has put Mike on notice. Heard a voice on tape so many times, I won't know how to talk to a real voice like yours for a change. How are you?
I'm fine. That's the first time that I've heard the tape.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, and I guess I'm a little broke up about it, hearing it again.
Oh, you shouldn't be, Mike. Mike, first of all, you need to know a couple of things. Caller after caller has said they would have had the same instinctive reaction. First of all, obviously you weren't going to send the police over to shoot her poor daughters. You were just sort of, you know, I think you were kind of putting it in context, like, you know, what are we exactly supposed to do? But it seemed to me that you immediately realized that you made a mistake.
Yes. When she paused, you know, I knew that what I had done was wrong and that I'd hurt her and, you know, put her in shock when she's calling, you know, for a genuine 911 emergency. And, you know, I knew that what I had said hurt her and just, you know, I was just sorry at the time, and I tried to express that as sincerely as I could. You know, I realized that I still had to go on and take the call and get the information and dispatch the police.
Sure.
But, you know, I was really tore up that I said it, and, you know, I knew I was wrong for saying it at the time, and, you know, I'm so sorry that I said it, and, you know, she's so hurt and everything. It's really tore me up.
Well, it speaks so much about your character that you're worried about her hurt feelings, because frankly, she doesn't, to us, she doesn't sound hurt. She just sounds kind of mad.
Yeah, I'm shocked and amazed at the amount of support that I've got. When I got to work yesterday, I was dreading going in to have to face everybody, and
wow. And
then the people, the police officers and the fellow co-workers, you know, in the administration building, you know, were just coming up and telling me they were behind me, and, you know, so many people praying, you know, that we'd
be able to make it through this and everything with other situations. And, you know, my boss came up to me, and there was a news crew there waiting, and I had so many emails and recorded messages from people all over the country, and I was just overwhelmed.
Yeah, I was going to say, you sound like you're overwhelmed by it all.
I'm humbled. I don't know how to take it. I never dreamed that I would be supported.
Well, and you know something, Mike? I mean, you're supported because, and I talked not only on the air with your chief, but off the air, you are so well-respected and so liked and so appreciated. And, you know, when you do a good job, you've got a great track record in the years that you've been one of the dispatchers there in the Watauga Department of Public Safety. And you know what? I mean, this didn't have to have an unhappy ending for you. And I'm so glad that you know personally how much you're supported. Obviously, this lady, you know, is angry. She was miffed. She wished you hadn't said that and all that. And you do, too.
Yeah.
And everybody understands that, but for her to demand more than, I mean, did you think you were going to lose your job?
I did. That was, you know, after my initial bad feelings of hurting her and putting her in that situation. And, you know, when she's in a stressful situation, in an emergency and calling 911, of course, you know, I thought, I believed immediately that I would be fired. And I called my boss. And I know my boss is the kind of guy that he wants to be notified immediately. And, you know, I called him and told him, I said, David, you know, I've really messed up this time. And, you know, I told him and I gave him the time and everything that the call came in so he could listen to the tape.
You didn't mess up, Mike. You reacted instinctively. Now, I'm sure you'd never make that error again. But
no.
You know something? It isn't like the woman thought. I mean, there was no harm done here. And when I talk to the few people who think you did some egregious, horrible thing, I'm like, well, what did he do that was so wrong? He reacted instinctively because he didn't want to tie up his police officers on a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old fighting.
This is kind of some sick stuff. Not because I think that this Mike Forbes guy, I'm talking about the dispatcher, needs to be flogged or anything like that. He's basically a product of an insensitive, callous society. He's around all of these pigs who run around tasering six-year-olds. And radio stations like this, Yahoo Station, go around and protect the pig cops when they're running around raping girls, like this one guy who was just convicted, getting caught with steroids, you know, because all these little punk cops in the inner city, like the little rider types, because there's more than the four riders. They're little punks. So they walk around West Oakland scared half to death, all weak and stuff. So they want to put on some kind of facade that they are some kind of tough guys, you know, the Arnold Schwarzenegger syndrome. So you see all these pig cops jacking themselves up on steroids. Which poses a question. How is it more important to get steroids since it's supposed to alter your whole mindset and chemistry and have you go into roid rages at times? How is it more important to get roids out of a silly baseball player system as opposed to a cop who has a gun? But, you know, logic aside, you got all these cops running around acting a fool and stuff. It's a very macho environment that these dispatchers are in. They're often hearing the cops complain and talk all of this, you know, sick jargon and stuff. So they get caught up into it. Often some probably look for that type of job because of their whole mindset. So he basically just showed his ass. Now, but see, the sick part comes in and how there's all this reinforcement in his defense. You hear this Mike Gallagher clown on this radio station tell him, you didn't mess up. Now, every time you turn around, these dogs are trying to make tougher and tougher sentencing on teenagers, on kids in general. They're often trying to charge them as adults. They're the ones who portray them as super predators and all of these other types of names. And when incidents like the other day, when a 13-year-old bashed to death a 12-year-old over a baseball game and did it with a baseball bat, this is right up these hooligans' alley to go on and talk about the teenage menace to society syndrome. So here, all of a sudden, a woman who was probably caught up in that type of imagery and scared and didn't have any kind of a support basis, she calls these thugs where she's been programmed to. They get flippant with it. She calls them on it. And then here come the right-wing radio stations to the flippant dispatchers' rescue. This enforcing the callousness. Now, Mike was trying to be humble and reconcile his actions. But the right-wing host, Gallagher, no way, no. I mean, just the callous and viciousness within this society.
You know what? This is, we're talking about the crises in everyday life and how we deal with them, with the measure of decency and, you know, some kind of sympathy, actually, when people are going through this type of stuff. Disrespect is so rampant. I'll give you a tiny example that happened to me today. I went to buy a battery, okay? People asked for my personal information, my phone number, social security, all this kind of stuff. I don't give up my social security number unless somebody's cutting a check for me that's going to the IRS. So I explained to them, I'm sorry, but you can't have my personal information. I'm just buying a battery. I'll probably never see you again in life.
A car battery?
Yeah. So dig this. The little assistant manager says to me, well, okay, but then you can't have the warranty. If you don't give us your phone number, you can't have the warranty. I said, listen, not only are you going to give me the warranty, but you're going to give me my money when I come back with the shell. You know, you give the old battery back. And I ain't really, you know, I actually went off on him right there. And maybe I wasn't that nice the way I went off on him. But the point is, it's one thing to ask for information. But if people don't want to give you the information, you don't lie to them and tell them that they have forfeited their warranty. That was the first thing that came to his mind. He just did that gratuitously. So, you know, I talked to the management, by the way, and they naturally hurry up and agree with me and then call and tell them, look, shut up, just get, you know, blah, blah. But why do we have to go through that? All I did was come in there to buy a battery, man. Give you some money. You give me my battery. I go. If it's a 7-year warranty, all the better. I bring it back if there's a problem. What are we dealing with here? Why do people feel so vicious to each other at this time in history?
Now, next, Mike, still feeling sorry. I'm talking about Mike Forbes, the dispatcher. Is applauded by, you know who, Gallagher and company, while the mother continues to be attacked. Big.
And I both know you've been around long enough. We know how the world works. I guess short of that, she's probably going to want a chunk of change. I guess from what talk. I don't know. Maybe she's going to sue you.
You know, if I told somebody else that I was one of the other agencies that had called the other day. I haven't spoken to many because it's just tough.
Sure it is.
But, if I could afford to give her a cash gift to appease her or to get her over this or to bring her peace in her life, I would do it. And I would publicly apologize. I would write her a letter. I would do anything to ease the tension and the stress that she's going through.
I wish I could talk. You know what? I mean, I've been hard on her, as you may have heard. I don't support her in any way, shape, or form, but I really would love the opportunity to find out why she won't let up. I mean, and you just worded it so kindly when you said you wish she had peace in her life. I don't understand why this has brought her such a sense of turmoil. It was a mistake that a dispatcher made in Watauga, Texas. Now it's time to move on and maybe worry about why she had to call 911 over her two little children.
Right, and we get calls like this all the time.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
It's amazing how many calls, even in, Watauga's only 3 square miles, but
wow,
we probably get 4 or 5 calls a week.
Did you have any idea this would get this kind of national attention?
Oh, my gosh, I just can't imagine. When I was in the chief's office Monday,
for our meeting.
Right.
He told me then, you know, that this may hang around and that, you know, the news media may get a hold of it. And he said, you know, he mentioned that it may even be picked up by the national news, which
right.
I never would have dreamed it.
Well, it has in a big way. In fact,
so once again, you see that the Mike Forbes guy, he knows he blew it. But the whole tone and the whole operation mode that the host, Gallagher, is set in is, nah, you have nothing to feel ashamed of. It's her. Why won't she let up? Etc., etc. It's, now, maybe the reason why she won't let up is because she's been trained by people within this society that to keep pressing an issue, just like Gallagher is pressing the issue in his whole propaganda mode. You know, the way these Shaivo people kept pressing the issue with all of their contradictions and everything else. Now, the mere fact that Mike Forbes, the dispatcher, admitted that we get calls like this all the time, just in that 3 to 4 mile radius of that little town, we get 4 or 5 calls per week. This is another indication, like I was revealing before, of societals and areas breaking down. But since he knew that they were getting these types of calls, you would think that he would be more sensitive to the issue, that people are lost. They're isolated in a form of despair. But see, he was just coming from this kind of machismo, chauvinistic mindset, probably reflective of the other, you know, pig cops that he works with, who he dispatches out to these areas and stuff. So he probably heard their jargon on the radio and this had the same type of gruff attitude. Oh, yeah, you want me to go out and send someone to shoot him? You know, that type of attitude. So in a sane society, I'm not saying that the Mike Forbes guy's head needs to be cut off, but you can see how this stuff is perpetuated by how clowns like Mike Gallagher, the host, keep on and on and on, and not to know any bounds. Mike Gallagher now outlines for Mike Forbes the reward that he now is deserving of. Reward?
This guy is. Well, we've got some good news because you've come through in a big way. But quickly, because I'm excited as all get out. First of all, here's some of the reaction that people have been giving. I've got a guy in the Fort Worth, Texas area who's going to organize a golf tournament. He does this on a regular basis. They're charity golf tournaments. And he wants to do one. Usually they raise between $3,000 and $5,000. He's going to give all the proceeds to Gallagher's Army, which is my charitable foundation, to benefit the troops and their families.
Wow.
And he's going to do it in your honor.
That's great.
It's going to be the Mike Forbes tournament. And it's going to benefit lots of troops. This is a scholarship fund we've established for the sons and daughters of soldiers who have made the ultimate sacrifice.
Wow.
In Iraq and Afghanistan. So this guy, Greg Haddock, wants to do this in your honor.
Yeah.
Number two, you mentioned media. Tomorrow morning, I'm flying to New York after the show today to guest host Fox and Friends on the Fox News Channel. Please tell me you're a Fox News Channel fan.
I am.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Well, I'm guest hosting tomorrow morning, and I would love it if you could be my guest so we could interview you on Fox and Friends tomorrow at 8:50 Eastern Time, or no, 9:50 Eastern Time, 7 or 8:50 Central Time. Are you available?
Yes, sir.
Would you do it?
Sure.
Hot dog. And finally, and the most exciting part of all, the Mike Gallagher Show family of listeners and I got together yesterday, and we've raised enough money through Gallagher's Army to send you and your family to Disney World for a week on a vacation. All expenses, will put you up. You're going to go to the park. Because, Mike, you need to take your mind off all this foolishness with this poor lady and her daughters. And you and your wife need to go to the Magic Kingdom as our guests and have a great time at the Magic Kingdom in in Walt Disney World near Orlando, Florida. What do you think of that?
I don't know what to say.
Well, are you ready for a nice trip?
Oh, that would be awesome.
Have you and your wife been to Disney World before?
We never have.
You've never been to Disney?
No, sir.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you're going to have to put up with me telling you all the things you got to go and all the things you got to see.
Wow.
Because you and your wife will have a wonderful time. We're going to put you up. We'll give you the park passes, fly you to Disney World and back, and we'll work out all the details. Now, I think technically, I talked to the chief about this off the air. We're going to present this to your wife.
Oh man!
and then you're going to get to be her guest.
This is awesome.
When I first heard this, I thought it was some kind of skit. You know, it seemed so surreal. You know, all those silly TV shows on cable, like The Surreal Life and this and that. So I just thought, oh, okay, this is just some kind of spoof or something. But then when I looked into it, I came to realize, oh no, this is just America. This is just sick America. And there's something else going on where it's almost like the white male ego must be protected at all time. Any actions that it takes just about must be kind of nurtured and so on and so forth. So now you got Gallagher sickly tying this in, this whole episode in, to the troops. You know, so they're doing this thing in his name for the Imperial troops that are over in Iraq. Now they're going to have him on his little Fox News show, the Fox and Friends Hour on TV. Then he's off to see Mickey Mouse, someone who's helping plunder the world, you know, in Haiti and so on and so forth. So it's, you can see how it's all tied into the whole capital market imperial system. And that whole system is tied into chauvinism, callousness, shock and awe, disregard for human life. Just go out there and blow your wad. You know, if you get some collateral damage, hey, the joke's on them. Why would they care about some little kids in Texas? They don't care about some little kids in Iraq. Just much of the American public is too silly to see it.
I don't know, man. It's hard to deal with that. To give somebody an award for being rude to a woman in crisis, this is hard to believe. And they would actually have him on Fox News, bring somebody in to honor them for acting a fool. But you see, understand something, brothers and sisters. This is being orchestrated. You see, this is not the natural response even of the perpetrator. He himself apologized, as the man said, 5 times. So he knew he was wrong.
Right.
And then they go turn around and actually award him for this behavior.
You see how the machinery distorts natural human civility. He knew he was wrong right from the beginning. Right when she started to respond back and say what? He knew he blew it. He knew he was off the charts with his response. But all the action for him to try to show some sense of humanity about it is intentionally being grinded out of him by the host and the machinery that this Fox News host is behind.
And others might hear this.
And then, of course, he has his army, like he said, the Gallagher army, this diddleheads, they move in.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Randy.
I live right up against Watauga and Keller, and I drive through Watauga every day. It's not an affluent area.
Right.
It's a residential pocket. If this woman gets a dime from that police department, it would be a travesty.
Well, but you know what's terrible, though? And you know this as well as I do. You know, a community like Watauga might say, wait a minute. I mean, we could be fighting this thing in the courts for the next 20 years. This woman will probably want to have the U.S. Supreme Court weigh in, you know? And so they'll give her $10,000 to go away or something, maybe. And you're right, that would be a travesty.
It really would be. And look, if anybody should be fired from their job, it's that woman, because she's not a good mother.
All right, Randy, appreciate the call. 800-655-MIKE. Marie's on the Mike Gallagher Show. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm sorry. Anyways, I'm calling because, you know, she should be ashamed to call 911. She's tying up the line for other emergency.
You bet. Oh, I've said that over and over again. That's my whole point. I mean, if she thought her life was in danger, it's a 12-year-old child, for crying out loud.
So like I said, here this guy is talking about a 12-year-old child for crying out loud. But a while ago, it had a police-used taser gun to subdue 6-year-old. The student was wielding a piece of glass, so the teachers claim. Miami-Dade police tasered a 6-year-old boy who was wielding a piece of glass in a school office and threatening to hurt himself, officials confirmed Thursday. Police say they followed their own guidelines and only tasered the child because they were afraid he would hurt himself. But the incident has raised calls for the department to tighten its policies regarding the use of stun guns, which shoot 50,000 volts of electric current through a subject. And it goes into, you know, what happened and so on and so forth. Now, it was the school officials, because he was at school, who called the police. Now, what the hell? A 6-year-old? So they, once again, they fall into the trap because they've been programmed to call the authorities, call the police. You know, let them handle it. They come in like Gestapos and start shooting 50,000 volts around. Easily could have stopped his heart. And the Gallagher crew would not have condemned the school for calling the police on the 6-year-old. They would have been too busy protecting the police and saying, you know, look what these police have to deal with. They were trying to protect the kid, etc., etc. See, this is just an authoritarian game that these clowns are playing. So when you hear these clowns talk about the mother should be fired for not being a good mother, this is how they try to maneuver in all this state intervention type stuff. See, this is how you know society and those within the society are playing into certain tendencies that have relationships with totalitarian type societies. And you know the threat that they're trying to develop and open up within the spectrum of the masses of people.
In fact, if let's say, you know, when they say we should fire the mother for being incompetent or what have you, what did they really expect? Was she supposed to smack the bejesus out of both of the kids and physically assault both of them? Had she done that, the 911 wagon would have been there for her. There's a possibility of. Let's face that. Just real experience in my life. My little niece stayed out till 3 o'clock in the morning one time. So her mom is going to get that booty. She's going to tear that ass up. So here she go. She say, she got this dead scorcher chasing around the house. Girl jump under the bed. Mommy, don't be making all this noise. DC ain't really get into it. But people heard the noise, so they call the police. Here come the police. The police say, knock on the door and say, DC, what's happening? What's going on here? DC said, I was just whipping my daughter. So the police said, is that right? What are you whipping her with? She said, Stephen, go get the extension cord for the officer. So Stephen, go get the extension cord. The police said, ma'am, you're coming with me. What they did was they arrested DC, I guess for being a good mother, according to what they're saying, and then took the kids and put them in foster homes. We had to mobilize our whole family and all our resources to get our children back. And then, dig this, they put, you know, like she was arrested, went to jail, went to court, and they put this thing on her record. She can never work with children, ever again. Thanks a lot. I guess that was a good mom, huh?
That's why I'm a West Oakland shooter. I don't play that. But next, to show you how race plays into these dynamics. The other day, when the New York Yankees were playing the Boston Red Sox in baseball, a ball was hit into right field, and Gary Sheffield, the right fielder for the New York Yankees, went to retrieve it. A fan reached out. Now, whether he was trying to hit Gary's hat off, whether he was going for the ball, even though it didn't look like he was going for the ball, or whether he was just trying to hit Gary in the face or what, distract him or whatever, he ended up hitting him in the face. And Gary Sheffield swiped back at him and then got retrieved the ball, threw it in, and then went to confront the guy about it. He didn't jump into the stands. You could tell he wanted to. But then a security guard and other people kind of got in between. Meanwhile, a fan had thrown a beer that almost hit Gary, kind of like the incident with the Indiana Pacers, you know, with the little punk fan in Detroit threw a beer and hit Ron Artest. Anyway, Gary basically restrained himself. They got the fan who hit him and took the guy out of the game. They didn't charge him with assault or anything like that. They protected him, you know. But removed him from the game. Now, what's fascinating is how fans have responded, or in particular, Gary Sheffield's black. listen to how a caller on JT the Brick responds to this particular incident.
Want to talk about a laugher? Gary Sheffield saying that he got punched in the mouth. Who's his agent anyway? Vince McMahon? He had to talk about like that in Boston at Fenway Park, home of the South Boston handshake. Nobody punched him. Grow up. As far as that Juicin' Giambi goes, he's all done. The Red Sox are going to repeat. JT, have a great night.
Yeah, you might repeat.
So here you get this little machismo stuff from the little punk fan who's talking about Sheffield wasn't hit. He was clearly hit. But on top of that, the fan had no business reaching into the field of play. The ball was still live. And this is how incidents happen. Now, instead of saying, look, the fan had no business reaching in there, so on and so forth, it's turned on Sheffield. So here you have an incident where caller of 911, this woman who calls in, the dispatcher is callous towards her call. Instead of just saying, look, you did blow it, you know, cool it on that type of stuff, you know, calm down the machismo rhetoric and so on and so forth. Instead, he's rewarded for his callousness. Then you see Sheffield, who gets hit by a fan. He could have got hit in the eye, damaged his eye. He's a ball player. These types of things are, you know, incredibly important if you're playing ball at that type of level. Instead of just saying, look, the fan was out of line, so on and so forth, it's flipped for the fan. And Sheffield is berated. And Sheffield was the one who had the restraint. Not this sloppy, no good fan, you know, probably half drunk and so on and so forth. This is how sick, once again, and callous this wretched society is.
But it's hard to believe, Tracy, that they didn't file assault against the guy that put his arm in and struck him. He struck him.
Well, once again, this is how I said, this is why I said I think race does play a role in some of these things.
Are you sure they didn't?
Oh, yeah. Now, there's a player, Mike Newland. He was a player, white basketball player. A caller calls in on Rick Barry's show. This is another sports show. Rick Barry is a former NBA player. And this player reminisces about how tough guy Mike Newland used to respond to players. Now, once again, Mike Newland is a white guy. So let's see. He was a player. Let's see if they had the same type of attitude towards Mike Newland types of action that they had towards a Ron Artest or the callousness they showed Gary Sheffield.
Rick's face, that's what we want.
Never. I love Rick. No, I was going to school in San Antonio, and I was, I'm not sure if Rick was on
a baseline
team.
Bums.
Yeah, that's right. And Mike Newland was playing, and there was this guy harassing him mercilessly on the sidelines. And finally, the ball went out of bounds right near the guy, and Newland was taken out of bounds, and he just turned around and he fired it right into the guy's face. And then he turned around, threw it in bounds. Nobody said anything. The guy just fell down. That was it.
That sounds like Mike. Mike had another incident actually up in Seattle as well, and I've told that story before that was absolutely hysterical.
So once again, here this player, he's getting harassed, you know, berated by some little silly fan. He's not being touched by the fan, but this Caucasian player decides he had enough of it, turns around, smashes the fan in the face, goes about his business. Could you imagine if Ron Artest did something like that?
He did, and he's out for a damn year behind it.
Well, he didn't even do it like that. It wasn't a fan berating him. It was a fan throwing an object at him. So this type of aggression by certain segments of the society and callousness is just par for the sick course. And it shows and helps expose the callousness within the society once again. But to show how detached many elements within the society are also, you have a situation where the Enron fiasco shows how out of touch the American populace is. Here, they'll complain about players, you know, and their action, how greedy they are. The current thing is to go on about how greedy Terrell Owens is and how he wants to resign his contract, and they go on and on and on and on about that. But the same way that you heard me with the recorded dispatch of the incident concerning Mike Forbes and the woman who called, and the other incidents, is the same way that Enron was caught and has been caught doing pirated trading with a number of states and other hoodlums. Here you're about to hear a trader for Enron call someone in Vegas, Las Vegas, and set up a deal where Vegas would go offline around the same time they were going to punch the lights out in California. That way, California would be locked in with not having anywhere else to buy the electrical resources so that they can then spiral up the prices and pimp the state of California, i.e. the taxpayer, of the billions of dollars that they did. Now, you won't hear any cries and concern and admonishment by the Mike Gallaghers of the world on this type of reality.
Well, say it's Code Jim. This is Rich.
Hey, Rich. This is Bill up at Enron.
What's happening, Bill?
Not much, man. I'm giving you a call. We've got some issues for tomorrow.
Okay.
You ready for some issues? You're just about out of there, aren't you?
I got a couple more hours. I ain't going anywhere.
Good.
All right, shoot. I've got pen and paper.
All right, man. This is going to be a word-of-mouth kind of thing.
Okay.
Tonight, when you finish your normal QF, so for hour ending one,
right,
it'll actually be tomorrow.
Right.
We want you guys to get a little creative.
Okay.
And come up with a reason to go down.
Okay.
Anything you want to do over there? Anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some stuff that we could be doing tonight.
That's good.
You know, we need to come down and inspect this switch on the steam turbine. This one switch on this induction steam valve has been failing us, and we need to be down in order to pull the switch and adjust it.
No.
Yeah.
I like that.
And our electrician just happens to be on shift tonight, so it works out kind of good. Okay, so
we're not wanting to have it pre-scheduled.
Right.
It's supposed to be, kind of one of those things.
Okay, so we're just coming down for some maintenance, like a forced outage type thing.
Right.
And that's cool.
hopefully.
Yeah, and whatever adjustment he makes today is tonight is probably not going to work, so we're probably going to have to check it tomorrow afternoon again.
I think that's a good plan, Rich.
All right.
I know I can count on you.
No problem. I'm sure I'll have a good time. All right, so I got you covered for tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Rich.
All right, I won't even put that in the book. Okay.
Right on, man.
Bye.
Talk to you later.
Well, there you have it. Caught red-handed. His actual, one of the actual calls of these criminals from Enron setting up for the Vegas utilities to go offline, artificially manufacturing some kind of repair to lock in California to rip off the taxpayers' billions. Now, you have people on fixed income in all of these states. These hoodlums don't care about it. So what is more important? Terrell Owens trying to get a higher contract that doesn't affect your pocket in the real world, or these clowns ripping off the states billions of dollars that directly comes out of your pocket? In other words, the way the type of callousness that is perpetuated and ignored by the corporate media gives an indication of how the machinery works. Woman calls in, she's kind of scared, to 911. The operator gets callous. He knows that he did it. He played a little inhumane, insensitive game. He's rewarded for his callousness and is being bombarded by the machinery to not show any kind of human decency or respect for fellow human beings. Meanwhile, at the same time, Enron is exposed outright in their callousness towards human life, people on respirators, people on fixed income, people just trying to survive, as they play their pimp game in the most callous and vicious way. Yet, from the same corporate media structure, you won't hear them covering that, calling Arnold to the quote-unquote mat, or any of that type of stuff, because, see, this form of callousness is rewarded. In the same way you heard this caller basically tell Sheffield that, you know, his concern about getting a punch thrown at him is all, you know, what the hell are you complaining about, you know, that type of thing. This type of stuff is rewarded within this decadent, barbaric society, and it's all locked in within the machinery of the state.
Man, you know, one has to wonder about this, because this is almost by definition sociopathic behavior. You know, here, people call this guy, they don't give a damn about people who really need the service. They don't give a damn about raising the price of people who can't afford to pay more. This was, now I'm wondering how many people have heard this, Trace. Has this gotten around? Oh man, can't say for sure. Well, I can say this. I think it's important. I hope this program gets around.
All right, hold on a sec.
Is wrong. Hello, seekers. Here we go again. And hello, especially to the skeptic inside you who might still believe.
Alright, next, we're about to go into a Ruins of Empire segment. And what this deals with is the situation of the NBA. the Negro Bondage Association. Recently, the head plantation owner in charge, David Stern, wants to push for an age limit. Indiana player O'Neill, Jermaine O'Neill, said this could be racially motivated. This has created a stir somewhat. We're going to, of course, slave vote style, investigate this a little bit. As the empire keeps exposing itself brick by brick. Now, first off, here's what Jermaine himself had to say on this issue, where the Stern wants to raise the age limit to 20 years old for players to come in, as opposed to being able to just come in right out of high school. Quote, in the last 2 or 3 years, the rookie of the year has been a high school player. There were 7 high school players in the All-Star game. So why are we even talking an age limit? This was by O'Neill, who was drafted out of high school in 1996 to the Portland Trailblazers. Continuing, as a black guy, you kind of think that's the reason why it's coming up. You don't hear about it in baseball or hockey. To say you have to be 20, 21 to get into the league, it's unconstitutional. If I can go into the U.S. Army and fight the war at 18, why can't you play basketball for 48 minutes? Well, after he made these statements, these are the types of statements you started to hear, like on a Gary Radnick show, which is another sports talk show on 860 KNBR. Here
then was the classic pattern of the line that a lot of people use, and I know it sounds like, if you can go fight a war at a young age, you ought to be able to shoot a basketball for money. Right?
Well, you know, that's...
I mean, and I hate what...
No, Rich,
and I hate that kind of a... You know, that's like, if you're insulting me, if my name is Geronimo and you make fun of me... My mother gave me that, you know, Rich... That is the RC. Go ahead, RC. What did you just say about that? RC joining us now with way to go to the shut up card, huh?
Well, no, I mean, I was just saying to Ray off the air, no one says anything about the 16-year-old farmhand in Iowa that can throw 100 miles an hour, but as soon as a kid from Brooklyn with, you know, crunchy handles or something goes to the end, everyone has a problem.
Yeah.
But as soon as you bring up going to war and stuff, there's nothing you can say.
In other words, RC, let me translate. RC saying that it does sound a little racist. Rich, go ahead.
I'd have to disagree, RC, because check it out. If that's
how old are you, Rich?
I'm 41.
Let me step back and let you and a young man discuss this. Go ahead. Go, Rich.
RC, the old enough to fight vote. I mean, that kills you right there. I mean, there's nothing you could say because true, there are 18-year-old soldiers out there. But when you look at let's say baseball and you sign these young Dominican kids at the age of 15, 16, they still have these academies and they send them to the minor leagues because it's a private organization. It's not, you know, a government run sport, for example.
Hey, Rich, can I tell you, much as I love RC, he didn't interrupt you. That show go right down the tank if you let the callers go on that long. RC, jump in.
The NBDL does not exist in the Roanoke, whatever they're called, the Nashville, whatever, the NBDL. I mean, that's a minor league system.
You know what? And I believe that we should send 18 to 20-year-olds to the NBDL.
All right. This once again gets into some of the sickness of the society. The reason why I say this in part is because, you know, these guys are all these free market capitalist type. They're all about, you know, making money and whenever you can and so on and so forth. And they don't have any real problem with seeing baseball players that, you know, come out, you know, 18, 19 years old, or hockey, et cetera, et cetera. But now all of a sudden it keeps being an issue. Now the reason why there's players in the NBA at this age is because they're being drafted. It's not like they're forcing their way in like they have Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton picketing for them to be allowed to play in the league, even though they're quote-unquote unqualified. Stern basically is a marketeer, and he wants to market the game. And with all the Negroes, he has a certain issue with marketing towards his quote-unquote target audience, mainstream audience. And as the NBA becomes more and more, as they like to term it, hip-hopized, you know, with the hip-hop youth orientation, the tattoos, the braids, the headband, the dreads, etc., etc., Stern and a lot of them are trying to put certain barriers so you don't have people coming in as young, as hip-hop-ish looking and orientated. So for marketing purposes, you do basically now. So basically, here you see an image that looks a certain way that a white male, Stern, is trying to sell to a certain portion of the population, and he has, from his own issues and other people's issues, marketing problems. Now, here you have a situation where for years, if the NBA was serious, they could have had some kind of minor league set up. I mean, a serious one. But they don't care about these black males, if they make it, if they don't make it. They could work with the college ranks and make sure that these black males get a better education, do things to have more incentives for college athletes or for students coming out of high school to go to college, etc., etc. But they're all a product. And that's how Stern is looking at this whole situation, as people being a product and how to sell this product. And you basically have high school and college players looking at themselves, as one player who just left North Carolina early, as being, as he called himself, a one-man corporation. So you have this whole capitalistic mentality that's prevalent amongst the players, coaches, owners, etc. So everyone's trying to market themselves, sell themselves, get shoe contract. But at the same time, you have this plantation owner of the NBA, Stern, trying to figure out the best way of marketing his particular product. And having them coming in older is something that he feels would better enhance it. Now, they hide behind all of this. They'll learn fundamentals better and all this type of stuff. But look, if the fundamentals that they're talking about were so crucial, the older players who quote-unquote have better fundamentals would be able to starve off the younger crop coming in. Because all the footsteps and, you know, sound fundamentals would override it.
Right.
But obviously it's not. Now, what's also fascinating, as O'Neill talked about, was that you have all of these NBA players who came right out of high school playing in All-Star games. Seven played in All-Star games. Many of the top players today, O'Neal's one of the top players, Stoudemire out of Phoenix, you have Kobe, you have what's his face out of he plays with Sprewell, the tall cat, Sprewell. Kevin Garnett. So you have all of these cats who came right out of high school and are, you know, some of the top players in the league. So as O'Neill said, look, this is basically a done deal. This is not about these players bringing down the game. Even the player who just came over to the Warriors said that he feels that for many players, going right to the NBA and practicing right alongside NBA players and getting a direct exposure to the NBA game and coaching under NBA coaches is a better experience than going to the college. So to talk all of this, you know, fundamentals and all of that type of rhetoric, this shows where these clowns are really coming from.
Let's just look at three players right now and get concrete with it. If it's bad to let youth in, let's look at Dwayne Wade, Miami, one of the best guards in the league right now. Let's look at Carmelo Anthony. Well, yeah, but you know what? That's true. He did have 2 years of college, but he, when he got in, I think he was like 19, you know, his first year. And then the other one is LeBron James. Man, all of these guys were below 20 when they started. These are some of the best players in the league. There is such a thing, you know, by the way, as natural talent. It's not all simply a matter of fundamentals. I mean, why hold people back? Why hold back the youth? I think it's rather sad to you know, they don't want to admit. It's pretty, I think O'Neal is right.
And basically, once again, it helps expose the kind of driving sickness that exists within this society and how the savagery that plays into the psyche of people and what they get upset about on the playing fields of the plantation and on the larger plantation, Sam's plantation, exposes that an earful of American savagery, so to speak, is more than what Mike Tyson could ever possibly bite off. Earful of American savagery is more than what Mike Tyson could ever bite off. As the hypocrites in American society squeezed out in Night of the Living Dead horror over Mike Tyson's ear-biting fiasco, many recoiled in terror as if this were the worst action they'd ever seen or heard of on this planet. True to form, large segments of the red, white, and blue way of life, called Mike the traditional subhuman names set for black males, names like savage, thug, animal, madman, etc., etc., etc. But while they were belching out their hypocritical outrage over Mike's action, one must wonder, did Mike's ear-biting of Evander Holyfield's ear in the heavyweight championship fight make them go blind, deaf, and dumb, or dumber, about what truly savage acts and decisions were going on in America, and concerning Sam's policy and action throughout the world? In December 1992, the U.S. imperialist machine went out and led, at their insistence, a so-called humanitarian aid in Somalia. Even though neocolonialist governments like Sam don't go on peace missions, those words of class-conscious wisdom went unheard by and large by the American public. but what has also gone unheard, for the most part in traditional Gumpified American fashion, is that instead of the peacekeepers, quote-unquote, keeping the peace and practicing out their humanitarian principles, they were busy torturing Somalian kids, like forcing kids to drink their force-induced vomit. And in a case caught on picture, one can view a UN soldier barbecuing alive over an open pit of fire a Somalian kid. So the same week that the American public's outcry impelled Mike Tyson to come out and make a public apology for his action in the ring, an apology most refused to accept or hear, was the same week that in Belgian courts, two of the soldiers on trial for this truly savage, barbaric act were let off free and found not guilty by the court, as the judge ruled that the soldiers were just playing with the kid. But we hear with our intactic ears no outcry from the same elements that were the part of the Let's Get Mike Brigade over this decision, or any talk of just what was the U.S.-led UN peace mission really doing over in Africa. The American public, by and large, just doesn't have any ears for it. Nor did they have any ears for, remember back in Alabama in 1994 when the high school principal, Hewlett Humphrey, called a student meeting with the junior and senior class and asked the students, were any of them planning to bring a date from the opposite race to the prom? And when hearing the response was yes in the affirmative, Humphrey said that if any interracial couples tried to attend the prom, he would cancel the event. When a girl with one black parent and one white parent asked Humphrey what was she to do in her predicament, Humphrey responded back in traditional American values fashion that her parents had made a mistake in having her. These statements enraged the black community. It was the black community that was enraged by Humphrey's comments. And various civil rights organizations like the NAACP, SCLC, and the ACLU tried to get Humphrey removed from office. After the black community fought against the Board of Education for almost 2 years, boycotts, negotiations, and protests, Humphrey finally left office as the principal under a negotiated consent decree filed in federal court, which barred him from being a principal, supervisor, or a person allowed on the school campus with students under his authority. But lo and behold, when the American public was screaming and hollering its shameless false outrage over Tyson's incident, the Mark Furman of school principals, Hewlett Humphrey, illegally ran for and scandalously won the same week Tyson apologized to the Americano public the position as the county school superintendent, a position he morally should not have won, if such a word has any true meaning in America, but legally should not have been able to run for under the consent decree. Humphrey was not to hold such a position involving students. So while much of this country was expressing its lame shock and barbaric act of Tyson's truly conduct, a truly barbaric 322 final solution grown Alabama man with good old boy views is brought back into positions of power to affect and infect his teenage student population. Where's the moral outrage from the moral values crowd from this madness? And where were the law and order crowd, probably blowing up more people at an abortion clinic? And who was possibly damaged more, the girl Humphrey said was a mistake or Holyfield, who quickly seemed to get over mentally Mike's indefensible act? Interestingly enough, Humphrey didn't have to leave the country or even his state, unlike many were predicting and hoping Mike would have to if he ever wanted to box again. And nowhere was crime Bill Clinton's outrage to be seen, or was he so busy ballyhooing about Tyson that he couldn't hear the cries of injustice that same week in Sweet Home, Alabama? And this was in the midst of crime Bill at the time yakking about let's discuss race in America. Well, crime Bill, there's a fool in Alabama you can have started with. Actually, you two are just two peas out of millions in the same pot. So while the pathetic Boxing Commission exposed its outrage, the Board of Education in Alabama was giving the students of Alabama and America its true-to-form American history, psychology, biology, sociology classes on race. As Charlotte Frickson, the only black out of seven Board of Education members, explains what kind of lessons the board truly feels needs to be learned.
Has been totally sympathetic to Helen Humphreys with no regard, no concern whatsoever for the other students and parents and their concerns. They have been reckless in spending school funds. They led our school system into a state of financial ruin because of legal fees incurred trying to defend themselves for retaining Hewlett Humphreys even after he made the racist remarks. So I have basically been a thorn in their sides up until, you know, the time that I attended my last board meeting. So basically, you know, I think they're still acting recklessly and you know, without regard to what really ought to be our priorities in the system. You know, I think our priorities ought to be about settling these racial problems, finding a way to sit down to the table together and work it out, you know, work with the community and appeal to the community for their help.
But the corporate-owned media and the American public at large can't hear those types of appeals and scandals because Mike's biting of Evander's ears affected their hearing. So while the Board of Education played out its traditional role, the Boxing Commission, under the false pretext of saving boxing its integrity, stripped Mike of his boxing license for around a year, at which time they told him that his reinstatement would be up in the air. Yet a few years ago, a program was on, and it focused on a black boxer who was fighting constantly and losing constantly by constantly getting knocked out, fight after fight. Even though he was supposed to sit out a required amount of time before re-entering the ring, yet he was simply going city to city, state to state, with the program's cameras following him as he was fighting before his time requirement for sitting out was up again. As each trainer and promoter for each opposing fighter willingly had their fighter fight him to build up their own fighter's win record. It was later revealed that the reason he was losing all of these fights wasn't because he was throwing them, because he wasn't. It was because from a result of boxing, he was declared by medical examination, legally, blind. Now, if these raggedy boxing commissioners don't care about this near broke, desperate, and blind black boxers' eyes and brains, for that matter, that were constantly being bashed and battered all over the place, and never bothered to put in the proper tracking and safety and health pinching guidelines for him and many other boxers in a similar predicament, what makes one think that they truly care about a piece of another black male's ears? Give me a break. And where was the outcry from the public over this blind black boxer's plight? Oh, never mind. The compassionate American public was blinded themselves by the blows he took to the head. So while the hypocritically biased American public, crime Bill Clinton, and the corporate media expected, if not demanded in some sense, on certain levels, an apology from Mike, it's revealing that none of these elements expected or demanded that the grown white male CEOs from the cigarette corporation that stood up under oath in front of Congress and the American public and lied outright when they said that there was no evidence that cigarette smoking causes cancer, when at the same time their own scientific labs and research departments had documented the cancerous effects of smoking and its addictiveness of nicotine years ago, as a whistleblower proved. The cigarette corporations and owners withheld the documents along with the fact that a cigarette company had illegally added 13 ingredients into cigarettes that hadn't been FDA approved. All this in the face of cigarette killing 400,000 American citizens a year. Are not the illegal acts of the cigarette company and the white males sailing this cancer ship a crime? bill? And shouldn't that also propel individuals we've been leading, who've been leading this massacre, to accept some personal responsibility, as opposed to being able to hide behind some corporate negotiated payoff slash buyout settlement when they've been the lawbreakers? This isn't to excuse Mike's action in any way. In some ways, it's somewhat predictable. Mike, like Tupac Secure in today's society, who've had the same black rage that other generations of black folks have had, have been depoliticized to the point to where the black rage can explode at any point against friend or foe. Mike has always insisted his innocence in his rape conviction, a trial that articles in the American Lawyers and the New York Law Journal reached similar conclusions concerning the way the judge excluded pivotal witnesses. Some of Mike's rages seem to be not only over losing his freedom, which over honest examination is clear the rape trial was a sham, but his rage also seems to stem from Mike losing some of the best boxing years of his life. But Mike never really took on intellectually or constructively the system that devours lives like ours for lunch, and that's a large part of the problem. When one examines Muhammad Ali, who lost much of the best boxing years of his life, Ali confronted the policies and powers that be over this. Ali made a mockery over Sam's war and reasons for that war. And in open defiance to this hypocritical government and arrogant populace, Ali stated, why should he go fight in Vietnam? No Vietnamese ever called him a nigger. Through these types of efforts of venting, developing, and expressing, Ali, along with others of that ilk, have been able to turn their black rage into a well-balanced, well-focused, well-challenged form of black empowerment. That's in part how one controls it. But in the age of the let's just get paid, bling bling mentality, and that's supposed to somehow take care of your problems, your rages from injustices, that Jesus or Allah or some invisible kingdom through inner peace and humbleness and yada yada abracadabra take care of it. Yet time after time, explosion after unchanneled Tupac explosion, it hasn't and doesn't work for our generation. And as Ellis Close's book, Rage for a Privileged Class, explores, it doesn't work for high-income blacks either. So while many of us in this generation are going into these unfocused, unorganized, blind rages, explosions, and other things of that ilk, many expressed in general shock on how Geronimo Gijaja could walk out of prison proud, strong, focused, and intact after spending 27 years in prison, more years than Tupac lived on this earth, after being framed up by the government's counterintelligence program. Yet Geronimo's own revolutionary organized personal struggle and style makes it clear, and if Mumia gets out alive, you'll see the same thing. Revolutionary struggle and consciousness makes for a healthy channel spirit. With the real enemies in one's sight. So the thing, and when things seem to rage haywire in the ring for Mike after he received a headbutt which raised the level of his defeat in the bout against Evander, he exploded in a blind rage that ended up being more self-destructive to himself than anyone else. And the person's ear he was chomping on in the real world wasn't the real enemy that created all of this black rage inside of him. Nor was Evander the person in society that allows $4,000 per year to be spent per student in the schools where the Mike Tysons of the world go to school, as opposed to the $19,000 per student per year in the New York suburbs. It's Sam. So when Mike, or Tupac, to use one of Pac's words, screams in a song, fuck the police, which includes everyone, including himself in it, a revolutionary says, no. When Tupac or Pac in a song says, fuck the world, which includes everyone, including himself in it, a revolutionary says, fuck the world, the capitalists and their sidekick running mates, the racist, sexist, homophobic fascists thrive in and help create and perpetuate. But so far, the American public has no ears for that reality either. Or in other words, when white SNL bandits stole $500 billion from the American public basically said, okay, but when Mike lost pay-per-viewers $50 for a disqualified fight, heads, not just ears, must roll. This has been Tracy James with a commentary. An ear full of American society, of American savagery, is more than what Mike Tyson could ever bite off. Out. That's just about going to wrap it up, The Slave Tonight, where it's clear that the savagery of America and the callousness of America cannot be changed from within the machinery of America. It's something that's going to have to be dealt with slave revolt style. That is the other side of the game. Until the next time. Out.